It's time for us to begin our class. Good to see you. We're almost done. We have tonight and then next week, and our time will come to a close in the book of Ecclesiastes. I hope you've seen that it's not quite the book that Eeyore wrote. It is not quite as depressing as we would think, but it is a book that, again, we'll see tonight, compares what earthly wisdom says compared to what godly wisdom would say about life in a lot of areas. And we'll see that, like I said, again tonight. Just to recap kind of where we were, we started a new section last Wednesday, Ignorance of the Future. I don't know about you, but my crystal ball doesn't really give me much information. How many of you guys, Magic 8 Balls, anybody did that? Okay. If you want a fun, Magic 8 Balls, did y'all do Magic 8 Balls? All right. Well, if you don't know what that is, see me after class. I'll tell you an awesome story about that. But we don't have time in here. So we'll be looking at starting again kind of in chapter 9. And we were kind of got halfway through chapter 9 last Wednesday. And we start chapter 9, verse 11, with the transition statement. What do we see a lot? What phrase do we have repeating quite a bit in the book of Ecclesiastes? What do we see? Vanities. Another one that he uses a lot in transition here in verse 11 is under the sun, right? We see that quite a bit, under the sun. And he says, I again saw under the sun that the race is not to the swift, the battle is not to the warriors, neither is bread to the wise, nor wealth to the discerning, nor favor to men of ability. For time and chance overtake them all. Moreover, man does not know his time, like a fish caught in treacherous net, or birds trapped in a snare. So the sons of men are snared at an evil time when suddenly it falls upon them. All right, so we look at this. What would wisdom say about those who run a race? What would wisdom say about those who would win a battle? According to conventional wisdom, if you want to win a battle, then you need warriors, right? Yes. I mean, I know it's probably been a long day for you, but if you need warriors, if you want to win a race, then you want to be fast, right? That's what conventional wisdom says. Unless Aesop's fables, tortoise and the hare, setting that aside, conventional wisdom says that you need to be fast. So verse 11 says, conventional wisdom, these are the ones that you're going to bet money on. They're going to complete the task. But what does he say at the end of verse 11 that kind of throws chaos into it? Time and chance. Have you ever seen a game, a football game especially maybe, or I don't follow much other sports, but football. And let's say you knew this team had all the stats. They had every reason to win, and they lost big. Have you seen that happen before? Okay, we've seen that over and over and over again. Time and chance happen to all things. And so this is a life lesson. This is obviously something that happens all the time. But conventional wisdom says this is what's going to win, or going to be successful, but time and chance. So those are two elements that we cannot control. And you'll see some other things as we go through this evening. He's really talking about some things that we have no control over, and we don't know about the future. And so our future is like a fish caught in a net or a bird snared. We just don't know. Things happen, right? Things happen, and we have no control over them. And so our life is just this way. Luke chapter 21, verses 34 through 36. Christ talks about that. Luke 21, 34 through 36. And then James 4, 14, right? Our life is but a vapor, right? So these are not new biblical concepts to us, but things happen and fall suddenly upon us. And then as we go into verse 13 through chapter 10, verse 15, we kind of again moving in here to this section. He also transitions here. Wisdom is vulnerable. Moreover, it says, also this I came to see as wisdom under the sun, and it impressed me. Would you want to read about something that impressed Solomon? I think so, right? I mean, here's a guy who has everything. Nice houses. He has literally everything almost at the time. But here's something that impressed him. What does he say impressed him? There was a small little hamlet. A small city with a few men in it. And a great king came to it and surrounded it and constructed large siege works against it. What happened to this city? You can read on. I don't have to read this. What happened with said city? Who saved the city? Was it the warriors that saved the city? Wisdom, a poor wise man. Which is interesting because here we have, what did we see earlier? That wisdom doesn't necessarily give you bread, right? We saw that earlier. Here's a poor wise man. Can wisdom be found in people of humble means? Yes. Can they share that wisdom? Yes, they can. Is it always listened to? No, it's not, right? Because sometimes we discern wisdom based on, well, that person's poor, so they're not going to be that wise, right? Okay. They could have made some wise decisions. But we've already established that time and chance happens to all people. So our judgments based on how what a person looks like and where their station is in life, are those fair judgments? No, because time and chance happens to all people, right? And so here again, this wise man, this poor wise man, he delivered the city. They listened to him. But what happened after that? We moved on. Like, that is so yesterday, right? We moved on to new things, new, bigger, and shinier things. What's interesting is this is similar to a story that happened in 2 Samuel. Turn over to 2 Samuel chapter 20. 2 Samuel chapter 20, verse 15. No, sir, that's exactly right. And we see that also in 2 Samuel. That's kind of what we're going with this, in that it is not always the big, shiny person. It is not always the one that stands head and shoulders, Saul, right? It is not always that type of person that's going to be the good leader or going to be the person that have all the answers. Here, a guy is being sought after. He unjustly killed somebody among David's cohort, which is kind of a gruesome detail here, but we don't have time to get into it. But if you want some gruesome details, 2 Samuel gives you all those gruesome details in verse 10 through 12. And so now that they got that guy out of the road because nobody passed him because he was so gruesome, they had to pull him off the road and cover him up so that they would actually walk by him. But I'll let you read those details. So they besieged this city, all right? And they do exactly what we read about in Proverbs or in Ecclesiastes. They have this siege. They came in verse 15. They came and besieged him in this town. They cast up a siege ramp. If you're familiar with like earthen ramps or things like that, they put a siege ramp. If I don't know if it's earthen or if it was or whatever it was, but they made a siege ramp, okay? And they're coming up the rampart to destroy the wall so they can go over. You know, imagine that happening, all right? While they're doing that, what does the text say happened? While they're tearing down the wall, somebody sticks their head over and said, "You silly kniggets," right? What do they say? There's a lady, right? 2 Samuel chapter 20. Did I not say that? I thought I saw that. Okay. Well, 2 Samuel chapter 20, verse 16. Yes. So this wise woman called over and said, "Here, here, please tell Joab, come here, that I may speak with him." So in the middle of this battle, people are like tearing the wall down. This lady sticks her head over the wall and said, "Hey, I want to speak to Joab," right? And they're like, "Okay, we'll do that." This can't be like a huge, like thousands and thousands of people, right? We're talking, it just can't be this huge deal. So Joab comes up, is like, "What do you want?" Right? "What?" It's like, "What do you guys want?" It's like, "Well, we want this guy. He killed somebody." She's like, "All right, we'll throw his head over shortly." So she goes and talks to the people. They cut his head off and throw it over, right? Just boom, and they throw the head over the wall, right? And so she saves the city. Do you think she was remembered? Possibly. We don't even know her name, right? Typically, women were not, they weren't as remembered as men in the time. But a very similar, it's interesting that Solomon writes about this, a similar situation in Ecclesiastes, and say, this impressed me. This impressed me. Wisdom spoke at the right time, right? Have you ever been in a situation where you think, "I should probably say something"? It wasn't a very serious situation. How many of you have messed with electrical wiring? Anybody? Okay. How many of you are qualified to mess with electrical? Okay. All right. So Chuck's like, "Yes, I am." So there, I was watching some guys, they were stringing up lights. This was in, a third world country. This is off in the bush somewhere. They were stringing lights together, but had to twist them. You know, they weren't plugging them together. They were twisting them by hand. So while one group of brethren were twisting this together, the other group of brethren were starting the generator. The cord is already plugged into the generator. So I look at my guide there. This was when I was in Nigeria. I looked at my guide and I said, and he looked at me. And we both just kind of shook our heads and watched to see who was going to win, right? Guess who won? The generator won, right? And those who were happened to be touching the wire at the time lost. So maybe we should have said something, but it wasn't too fatal. But have you been in a situation maybe more severe than that where maybe I should say something? Wisdom will say something in the right time. And it may be forgotten later who actually said it. And, you know, history has a way of rewriting itself and favoring the victor. But it is probably best that we share wisdom when we can. Right? How many of you have received good wisdom from somebody and been thankful for it? Right? Somebody shared that wisdom. And so in this case, she was in 2 Samuel chapter 20, she was saving lives. They were going to come in. Not only that, I mean, this, imagine the repairs on the wall. I mean, so she was saving all kinds of money, and she didn't even switch to Geico, okay? So it was helping the city out. And so she did that. And so he says and writes about this. Here's something I saw that was interesting. Wisdom in verse 16. So I said, wisdom is better than strength. And we saw that in 2 Samuel chapter 20. Wisdom was better than strength in that moment. But not always will they be listened, or not always will they be heeded. And so we see that with this situation. The words of the wise heard in quietness are better than shouting of a ruler among fools. Have you heard that before? Somebody that just thinks they're going to be heard because they're yelling louder than everybody else? Does that annoy you at all? It annoys me. Am I alone in that? It's like, just because you're louder doesn't mean you're right, right? The whole squeaky wheel scenario. So, but that's typically what happens. Wisdom is better than weapons of war, but one sinner destroys much good. Where do we see in the Bible a situation where one sinner destroyed a lot of good? I'll narrow it down to a book of Joshua. Ai, right? That, does anybody name their child Achan? Clay? It's a last name. Okay, but we'll leave that. There's other issues there. But if you look at this situation in Joshua chapter 7, what did Achan do to destroy the good that could have been done? Do you remember the story? What did he do? He took silver and robes and that kind of stuff. What did he think he was going to do with that, by the way? Like, hey, Achan, that's a nice robe you're wearing. Why, thank you very much. I just made it. Oh, really? We've been in the desert for 40 years. Where did you get the stuff to make this? So how was he going to use any of these things, right? Maybe we didn't think that through. But he hid it under his tent, right? And so to the chagrin of his family, and off, you know, when they tried to go against Ai as well. So that can happen. So we need to be careful with that. Dead flies make a perfumer's oil stink, so a little foolishness is weightier than wisdom and honor. Have you ever tried to say something that was good, and then you messed it up later on, right? And so in a situation to, in this, he uses this analogy in chapter 10, verse 1, talking about those little things, details can mess things up. And of course, there's probably tons of stories you have in your life about details messing something up, things we overlook. All right, so impediments to wisdom, verses 2 through 7. I kind of like this. I'll let you interpret this how you want to. A wise man's heart directs him toward the right, but the foolish man's heart directs him towards the left. You can apply that how you want to, all right? But that's what the Bible says. So we look at what a wise man's heart is supposed to be directed towards what is right, to the righteousness of God, right? Even when the fools walk among the road, his sense is lacking, and he demonstrates to everyone that he is a fool. Have you seen somebody in the way they live their lives that they're probably not wise in the decisions they're making? Have you seen that? Nobody? Yeah. How many times have we made maybe unwise decisions ourselves? Like, oh, that was not the best choice. Yep. I mean, what's that?
Mm-hmm. But he's not going with the traffic, he's going against the traffic, so that's kind of goes along with that.
Yes, going against the traffic in a bicycle lane, which, I mean, I don't know, halfway blame him, because that means you got to trust people not to run up behind you and hit you, so.
But that's still a long way to get him right.
That doesn't make him right, no, but maybe it makes him alive. But anyway, so if we look at what... maybe not, so some people, the way they walk even, the way they carry themselves, the way they act in their life, are not seen to be wise. If a ruler's temper, and in that context, verse 4, if the ruler's temper rises against you, do not abandon your position, because composure allies great offenses. So, this again speaks to a situation where somebody gets mad at you, and then you have that volume game. Have you all done that before? I've seen it happen. It's not a pretty picture. So one person gets mad at one person, and they're yelling, right? Then the other person, guess what they have to do? They have to get louder, right? And then they're just going like this till, you know, they're both just screaming at each other. I worked for a guy whose temper was not that great, right? And so I've seen that happen on several occasions. Does that work? Does that usually work? No. That has never worked, right? Also, another word that doesn't really work in that situation is calm down. Does that ever? I don't think in any tone, in any way you say that, is somebody going to just say, oh, you know what? You're right. I should just calm down, right? That does not work. But what does he say does work? If I maintain my composure, if I maintain calm and normal talking tone, would that might help to calm the situation down, right? Allow that other person to save face, because if you tell them calm down, that means what? Oh, you just corrected them. And I, on principle, am not going to be corrected by somebody I'm already angry at, right? On principle. But if we allow them to recognize that they're screaming and I'm not screaming, and allow them to recognize, well, maybe I can calm down now, then that lets them save face, right? And, you know, bring some things to order. Yes, sir? You're putting more wood on the fire, aren't you? Exactly. Exactly. You're just pouring that coal oil on there, and it's not making it any better. Yes, sir. And especially in the face of rulers, I mean, because they have a lot more authority than we do. Us yelling at them is not going to help. And so he gives us that wisdom. And he says, there's an evil I've seen under the sun, verse 5, like an arrow which comes forth from rulers. And in this context, he talks a lot about the error and foolishness from on high. Error and foolishness from people who should know better, right? And he says, I've seen this folly. Folly is set in many exalted places, while rich men sit in humble places. I've seen slaves riding on horses and princes walking like slaves on the road. Foolishness can be in positions of leadership to where it changes things that should be right. It should not be that a slave is riding on the animal while the master is leading the animal. It's one thing if, like, I mean, that just didn't happen. In this context, that did not happen. So we're talking about a situation that is out of, it's the foolishness that's on high has turned things backwards and made things to where they're not the way they're supposed to be because of the type of leadership that's in place. That's never happened today. We don't do anything backwards and we don't do anything out of step because of leadership on high, right? That doesn't happen. We've evolved beyond that. Right? Of course not, right? What have we done in the name of political correctness that is just crazy in some aspects? Calling good evil and evil good. But and so here's some things that he says these are things that are not not wise. Moving on quickly, expecting the unexpected. If you expect things to go wrong, or you might be a little bit more prepared. This next verse, I've actually seen somebody do. I'm not going to say who it was, but I've actually seen a guy do this. Dug a hole and then fell into it. It was a deep enough hole that he actually broke a rib doing it. It was funny later. At the time, it was not so much. But he who digs a pit may fall into it, and a serpent may bite him who breaks through a wall. Now remember, what kind of walls did they have? Did they have like nice sheetrock and insulation? What kind of walls did they have? Block or stone, especially if they were of poor, they had just, you know, kind of fit stone. And so how many of you seen a snake crawl in a hole? That's what they do. All right, so if you've broken down a wall, sometimes there might be a snake there. He who quarries stones may be hurt by them, obviously, right? He who splits logs may be endangered by them, obviously. If an axe is dull and he does not sharpen its edge, then he must exert more strength. Wisdom has the advantage of giving success. What does wisdom do for us in these scenarios? What does wisdom do for us? Can keep us from getting hurt. I used to have shop class when I was growing up. They still did that. We were learning how to arc weld and oxyacetylene weld in sixth grade. In sixth grade, we were learning to weld and smelt metal, all that kind of stuff, in sixth grade. It was quite awesome, and then things happened. But anyway, so to scare us in shop class, and they told all the horror stories about things not to do. Right? You do not play cowboys and Indians with the air gun. That happened, and somebody got their eye, like, out. And so they have all these different stories about things not to do. Wisdom says we don't play cowboys and Indians with the air hoses, okay? So wisdom keeps us from getting hurt. And so those of us who have smashed thumbs know there's a right way and a wrong way to hold a nail, right? So especially if you're roofing. So anyway, we look at these things. Wisdom gives us that information. And again, if a serpent bites before being charmed, there's no profit for the charmer, right? You're not a very good charmer if the serpent bites you. Fail video, hashtag, don't play with snakes, right? And so we see that here in verse 11. Look over in, Proverbs 22. Beginning of verse 17, we have the words of the mouth of the wise. The wise men are gracious. In Proverbs chapter 22, beginning of verse 17 through Proverbs 24, verse 34, we have a section of scripture where we're giving some wise sayings. And it starts off in verse 17 of chapter 22. Incline your ear and hear the words of the wise and apply your mind to this knowledge. And it begins to say, here's the things that you need to do and do not do. In verse 22, do not rob the poor. Verse 24, do not associate with a man given to anger. Verse 26, do not be among those who give pledges. And in those sections, they actually say why. Here's the wisdom, don't do this, and this is why. And so we start this huge liturgy of wise sayings, beginning in verse 22, verse 17, through chapter 24, verse 34, through the end of chapter 24, this section of sayings of the wise one. So if you want to write that out there in your notes for Ecclesiastes, in Luke chapter 4, verse 22, those who heard Christ, in Luke chapter 4, verse 22, those who heard Christ said, his words are gracious, right? His words are wise. And we've kind of hinted at this earlier, that those who are wise and the information they give, it's welcome information. But while the lips of a fool consume him. And so the opposite is true for those who are fool. In verse 13, the beginning of his talking is folly and the end of it is wicked madness. So it's just a spiraling kind of, he starts off with folly and just ends in madness. It does not get any better with a fool. What else does a fool do with talking? In verse 14, many words. Have you ever heard somebody say, well, if I just talk a lot, maybe they'll think I'm smart? Or at least maybe they think that. You assume they think that because they just talk a lot. But that's not the truth, right? And so if we look at this, Proverbs chapter 17, it's interesting to kind of go through Ecclesiastes and kind of look back in Proverbs at some of these things. Proverbs chapter 17. Proverbs 17, verse 27 and 28. He who restrains his words has knowledge, and he who has a cool spirit is a man of understanding. Even a fool, when he keeps silent, is considered wise. Right? Some people need to consider that passage more often. Maybe you know somebody in your life that needs to write that out by hand and memorize that. Sometimes it's better just to remain silent and not say anything. Right? Sometimes there's no good thing to say. If you've been in a situation where you feel like you should say something, but there's probably no good thing you could say, silence is just fine. Silence is fine. And in this case, it is the fool that would continue talking when they should just be quiet. And so again, verse 15, the toil of a fool so wearies him that he does not even know how to go to a city. This is basically saying the foolish life wearies him so much that he can't even do the most basic of things. Like, this is like a very gross example of you can't even follow a road to the city, right? I mean, you've allowed things to kind of overtake you so much that you can't even get to the city. You can't even follow Google Maps, right? You can't even follow whatever color that line is that tells you where to go. So that's what they're saying here, if you want to update that here. So again, we continue with this idea, and he starts talking about these woes. Woe to the land, or woe to you, O land, whose king is a lad and whose princes feast in the morning. What are we saying here? Is it wrong necessarily that the king is a lad? Is that wrong? Yes, sir. Not in and of itself. Yes, sir. Exactly. That's exactly the point we're trying to make here, is that in general, a young king is not going to be wise. They're not going to have wisdom. They better have good leadership around them to help them. Like in the case of Josiah, he had good, strong leadership around him. What are we talking about, princes that feast in the morning? What do you go out to do in the morning? Or what should you be going out to do in the morning? Work. I should be going out to work, not feasting. So you see, again, this concept of things. Woe to a land that this is a leadership. Woe to a land when this is things that are the norm. But in contrary to that, verse 17, what do we have in verse 17 that's contrary to that? Those are, yes, so quite the opposite. Blessed are you, O land, whose king is of nobility, and whose princes eat the appropriate time for strength and not for drunkenness. They're doing it for their body's need, not for excess and drunkenness. So again, if those things are the case, if we have a land where the leadership is in this case, woe to that land. And through indolence or through slothfulness, the rafters sag, and through slackness, the house leaks. Is that true in a lot of areas? I mean, that's not just work. Like, physically, the house, if I'm slothful and lacking in my work, physically my house will begin to fall apart, right? That's true. What about our physical bodies? Do things start to sag if I don't work? Yes, right? We won't go into detail, but yes. But spiritually, if I'm not working spiritually, if I'm not strengthening myself and strengthening my feeble knees spiritually, do things start to sag spiritually? That's a universal truth, isn't it? That's a universal truth. That if we're not working, and then things begin to sag, and slackness and slothfulness. So that's a metaphor for a lot of things. And he uses it here with the country. And so in verse 19, men prepare a meal for enjoyment, and wine makes life merry, and money is the answer for everything. And this is not a good situation. This is not a good situation when this is what's leading a country. When we watch too many food-making shows, we drink too much wine, and money's just the answer. I'll just throw money at it, right? I mean, it's not wrong to eat, but if we're eating just for the merriment to engorge ourselves, and obviously the things that are... And money's not always the answer. So anyway, he's saying that these are bad things, and we're not even close to where we need to stop. But hopefully we'll finish this chapter 10 and then fly through 11 and 12 next week. So furthermore, in your bedchamber, Do not curse a king, and in your sleeping rooms do not curse a rich man. For a bird of the heavens will carry the sound of the winged and the winged creature will make the matter known. How do we say that nowadays? A little birdie told me, right? If you want to write out there beside, the update that phrase, a little birdie told me, right? So here's the leadership. This is the leadership that he's painting. Here's a lad that's leading us. The princes, those that should be leading in groups, are feasting instead of actually doing the work for the country, or they're just bickering amongst themselves, whatever is leading the country at the time. And they're not doing what they're supposed to be doing for the people. Woe to that country, because the leadership is not doing what it's supposed to. Now, when you get alone by yourself, don't talk bad about them. Why? What's that? Yeah. They're always listening. Always listening. Right? So, yeah. So, there's a reason why we might not want to talk bad about them. Nowadays, we don't have... It's electrical little birdie on our... Alexa, I'm talking bad about my country, right? So there's always things we want to be aware of. But does that help? In general, as far as... Does me running down somebody or anything, is that helpful to a scenario? If I know of a situation that is not working, and I have the ability to do something about it, right? It's within my purview to do something about this situation. We've already talked about what wisdom does. Wisdom says something. I could either A, sit there and talk bad about the situation and say, well, I can't believe this is happening. I can't believe they're doing that. Is that going to change anything? No. Is that constructive? Not at all. And what typically just kind of sows more, like, just builds it up more, right? It's more cancerous that way when we just sit there and talk about it and pick at it. Maybe you've probably seen a wound and you sit there and pick at it. It's not very good, right? Not pretty. But if I do something healthy and constructive to help it heal, that's good, right? And so, again, another lesson that we get from Ecclesiastes, it's good to help a situation, but sit and talk bad about it, it's not going to help. And they'll probably find out about it, right? They'll probably find out about it, one way or the other. Yes, sir?
Bring it back to that woman while under siege. She didn't go around asking people, why are they doing this? She went to the source and said, hey, why are you mad?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so it went right to the source, the woman, when they were under siege. And said, let's take care of this, right? And so that's, we should probably do some similar things. It's easier to sit and talk bad about a situation, right? That's easier. More comfortable. It's not awkward. How many of you have tried to talk to somebody and you think there's like a big issue and you approach them and you struggle through that awkwardness to bring it up, because sometimes it's just hard to bring up a situation, right? You struggle through, and then at the end, afterwards, it was just a misunderstanding. There was no big deal. We demonized or made it a bigger deal just sitting there thinking about it and stewing about it instead of talking to them, right? And so there's all kinds of things that just getting to the heart of the matter quickly is more helpful than sitting there and talking about it while you're sleeping and stewing about it, right? Yes, sir, and that's usually what happens. The innocent are usually most hurt in those situations. Yes, sir, that's true. Any other thoughts or comments before we close tonight? All right, thank you very much for your time.